Now, this next clip, again, is AI, and I apologize, Cotton Gin.
It must be quite apparent by this time to any thinking individual that the people of our country and people of other countries all over the world are coming to face a moment of grave decision. The time when we will choose the course of our future.
Oklahoma, Texas, New York, Philadelphia, around the world, it's gonna be a big nut bus.
The Millennial Media Offensive Podcast is now live.
That's right. Today's February 25th, 2026. You're listening to MMO number 108, and from the great city and state of St. Louis, Missouri, I am Dan Gehring. Quite unfortunately, John G. Doe was down with the flu last evening, and he is out of town or not around tonight. So we're going to be doing a little bit of a solo show last night. For people that are big fans, know that I live streamed the State of the Union completely sober. Which, man, it was rough. It was the longest State of the Union in recorded history. I think half of it was people clapping or chanting USA. But ultimately, I think Trump, the theme of it was have pride in America. Have pride in America. Have pride in your country. And I think that message was well received. I think it was a little bit oversold, probably by about 50 minutes of repetition of very similar things happening. It was very much like the old Oprah, you get a car days. At one point, a freed political prisoner from Venezuela was reunited with his niece live at the State of the Union. The USA hockey team that won gold was presented live at the State of the Union. Two medals of honor were given, one to someone involved in the Venezuelan op. Another one, a pilot that was like an ace pilot in Korea, received a Medal of Honor. A couple of Purple Hearts were given. And it was basically stunting on the Democrats in Canada the entire time. And I think for how most people consume it, which is going to be in 30-second minute time bites, it's going to be wildly successful. The Democrats had a response, and there was a lot of kind of childish and very unserious response from the Democrats. And I think at the end of the day, Trump definitely chalked up a W, despite it being, in my opinion, watching it from beginning to end, a snooze fest. I think probably less than 10% of America will consume it in that form. So, job well done. What's going to get clipped out of it is a part where he mentions the Somali pirates raiding the country, and the cameraman cuts to, what's her name? The Minnesota woman. I always forget her name. But anyways, you can see her trying to eke out a tear, trying to cry as if she's been horribly insulted by Donald Trump. And that was the only kind of moment that I think the media will clip out and cut out and say, you know, he's racist, he hates him. Oh, yeah, Omar. That's it. That's her name. I forgot it. So if you are actually interested in listening to that, the last episode we posted was my live commentary over the State of Union last night. Before warned, there's a lot of applause, and it kind of just sounds like brown noise after a while. So if you're having trouble sleeping tonight, might I recommend throwing that on? It would be much appreciated. But moving on here, we are going to cover a couple of the news items that we were supposed to cover last night. Again, John is out, so I'm doing a solo show this evening. I think we'll start light and work our way up. You know what? Screw it. We're not going to start light. Let's start with Mexico. For those that don't know, a cartel, El Mencho, was killed in Mexico. He was part of the Jalisco New Generation cartel. He was killed, and then the cartel started responding. So the way that Mexico has functioned for the past probably 50 years is, in effect, the Mexican government leaves the cartels alone, and the cartels, in turn, leave one of Mexico's largest industries, the tourist cities of Mexico, Cancun, Puerto Vallarta, etc., alone. They don't mess with them, and the government doesn't mess with them. Well, yesterday, or a couple of days ago, the Mexican government took out El Mencho, and all of a sudden, towns like Puerto Vallarta looked like Gaza with smoke rising up over the cityscape, which was a retaliatory response to El Mencho being killed by the cartels, saying, you F with us, we're going to F with you right back. So it's kind of interesting. I'll play a little bit of a ABC report. This is actually one of John's clips. He dropped some clips for me to play this evening, and then we'll talk about it a little bit more.
A major military operation in Mexico has sparked unrest in and around popular tourist destinations. Mexican authorities say 25 members of the National Guard were left dead in six separate attacks following the killing of the nation's most powerful cartel leader. Now, criminal groups immediately reacted by setting cars and buildings on fire. As ABC's Christian Cordero reports, they blocked roads and people, including American tourists, from leaving or entering various cities. Graciela, the White House confirms the U.S. helped Mexican authorities in the raid by providing intelligence.
Today, a violent raid in Mexico that killed one of the country's most notorious cartel leaders has millions of people on edge. Officials say Sunday's military operation killed multiple cartel members, including the head of the Jalisco New Generation cartel known as El Mencho.
El Mencho.
Mexico's visibly emotional defense minister today said more than two dozen members of the military were also killed during the raid. The White House confirms it helped provide intelligence for Mexico, but that no American troops were on the ground. Mexican President Claudia Sheinbaum emphasizes the priority now is to provide peace and security. Security forces are patrolling in the air and on the streets. On Sunday, criminal groups set up hundreds of roadblocks, setting cars and buildings on fire.
You could see the fear in people's eyes. I mean, they were very, very, very concerned.
The violence reached popular tourist destinations, including Puerto Vallarta and Guadalajara, as the U.S. Embassy urged Americans in Mexico to avoid all forms of travel.
We're all just under the shelter in place, told not to go anywhere, lock your doors, stay inside.
Sheinbaum says the roadblocks are now clear.
They're raping everybody
out here.
Puerto
Vallarta's airport suspended all operations yesterday, leaving people, including American tourists, stranded. Flights there, plus those to and from Guadalajara, have resumed today.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. I think that would be pretty scary if I was in Mexico and this was all going down. I too, would be freaking out because, as you know, you can't bring weapons into Mexico. It just so happens I did accidentally bring a round of 5.56 NATO into Mexico once, but it was not found by either TSA or the Mexican officials, so I threw it away when I got to my destination. But that being said, I think you can only read this in one way, in my opinion, and it is Mexico capitulating to the United States. There's been a couple of examples of that. Mexico said it was going to supply oil to Cuba to help keep it going, and then they did an about-face on it and said they're not going to send oil, and then Sheinbaum came out and said it's definitely not because the U.S. is pressuring us. And I think that this is the exact same scenario. And I can tell you why, because Sheinbaum was allowed to become prime minister by the cartels. Her predecessor, she was viewed as pretty much the same person or the same holding the same policies as her predecessor. And it was effectively, you know, we don't touch the cartels. So, you know, the U.S. might have supplied the information, but I think the U.S. also put a gun to Mexico's head and says, you either take out this guy now or something. And I think that's effectively what we're seeing right now is the capitulation of Mexico to the demands of the Trump administration. So obviously no one's going to come out and say that, but that's what I view it to be. So BBC had a fairly interesting segment talking about the killing of El Mencho and then what comes next. I think they actually nail it here. I think this is one instance of mainstream media getting it right. So here is a BBC killing El Mencho.
And Stuart joins us here live now. Stuart, I mean, you described the situation as chaos. This is, I guess, the cartels sending a message. You don't mess with us and get away with it.
That's right. I think there's a variety of phases that they go through. There's always, when a big player is killed or captured, a show of strength. And that's actually to sort of tell the authorities, don't carry on any more raids. That moves then into another phase, which is often where the cartel finds itself under pressure from other cartels, and they may well be fighting amongst themselves or with those other cartels. And then it can move on to them saying, well, actually, no, we're going to attack the government. And that is a calculation that the president of Mexico has had to make for herself, because it is very possible that they could organise themselves to attack. And they've already got the Sinaloa cartel that they're battling with, and these are the two big ones. So they would have two fronts. She's obviously made a decision that this is the right thing to do, probably because of President Trump.
And that's what I wanted to get to, Stuart, is that risking all of this, knowing what could happen, just to send a message to Trump, we are taking this seriously?
Yeah, definitely. He's been putting more and more pressure on the Mexicans, amongst other Latin American countries. Obviously, in Venezuela, the then President Maduro has been taken to the United States. He's been threatening to attack Mexico and say that if they don't do it against the cartels, he will do it. She's been holding him back, but saying...
That right there, I think, is a miss. I don't think Claudia Sheinbaum is seriously worried about Trump sending Delta Force in to kidnap her. I think there's something more on the table in relations to gain and trade or some sort of exposure that the United States could do to absolutely decimate Mexico economically.
Listen, we are carrying out operations. This is one of the biggest ones that's ever been, one of the most successful, but it does have consequences and economic consequences for the country generally, because it could all grind to a halt. And obviously, great potential for violence. I suspect the violence that has happened in such a number of areas in the country will have taken them by surprise. They would have known something was coming, but probably not so as big as it has been. But we are told now that things have calmed down significantly.
Yeah. So this no doubt is going to create a power vacuum within the New Generation Cartel, the Jalisco New Generation Cartel. I think they took out El Mencho, and then there was word that yesterday they took out the likely second in command. And so what precedes the execution or the removal of the head of a cartel is usually more violence, which they kind of highlight there. So I agree with them on that point. Now they're going to go to the next steps. What comes next in Mexico?
So, Stuart, I guess the question is, what next? Because, you know, as you say, there are potential for so many other variables, like turf wars, like, you know, attacking the government. What do you think, from your understanding and analysis of their thinking, is going to happen next?
Well, I think they're not going to be able to completely destroy any cartel unless by just taking out the head, because there's just always somebody to replace, even if there's bloody violence to get to that point. And I don't think that New Generation is going to stop business. But if they want to actually destroy the cartel, they have to take out all of the middle people. That they are the link between the higher echelons and the soldiers, if you like, on the ground. And without that middle, the soldiers slowly, surely fall apart. They're very young, as a rule, and don't have much money and all the rest of it, and they're dependent. You'd have to take out that middle cadre of the cartel to actually destroy it. And to my knowledge, that's never actually happened by the government. It's happened because of other cartels taking cartels over. And I think the other thing you've got to remember is the cartels are part of life in Mexico. They're part of the businesses. The legitimate economy still has a huge amount of cartel influence in it. And there's corruption everywhere, all through all levels of society. So I don't know how... I think what it might do is calm things down may calm things down, perhaps in the medium term, but getting rid of the cartels themselves that are so ingrained, I'd say it may actually almost be impossible.
Yeah, and I'm kind of worried in that it might become, and maybe during the Trump admin, but hopefully not, a thing where the cartels are effectively the Palestinians, or I guess Hamas, and we become the Jews in the scenario, and we mow the grass occasionally. I don't think that's a very good relation. I, for one, enjoy going to Mexico. I like Mexican people, and I don't see this being a very good policy to continue in that regard. Now, whether or not Mexico wants to get its own cartel issue under control is another thing. I don't think that they really wanted to take out El Mencho again. I think this was pressure from the U.S., and I think we'll continue to see that pressure, at least over the next 3 years. So it will be, it will definitely be very, very interesting. But I think this is another one of Marco Rubio's pet projects of, well, let's take out the real Mexican government, the cartels, with the, I guess, official on paper Mexican government, the National Guard. So are we going to see a full-on civil war in Mexico? Probably not, but would it be exciting for the show? Yes. Do I want it to happen? No. I do think the cartels are bad, but I think a constant battle with the cartels is worse. I think that just results in more people dying. But that's just me. There's a couple of people that were excited about that analysis. I hope that it scratched your itch a little bit. There's not a whole lot more there, I think, outside of it's, in my opinion, and maybe John will disagree with me next week, but I really do think it was just pure coercion from the United States that led to that action. In other news this week, the Netherlands, and this would be, I guess, a good transition to Europe from America, from the Americas. The Netherlands have a new prime minister. His name is Rob Jetten, and he is effectively Mayor Pete of the Netherlands. He's Dutch Pete Buttigieg, for lack of a better words, and not just because he's gay, because the guy looks like Pete Buttigieg, but here's him winning the election, and then I'll give you my thoughts on it.
This is an historic election result because we've shown not only to the Netherlands but also to the world that it is possible to beat populist and extreme right movements, and I'm very eager to cooperate with other parties to start an ambitious coalition as soon as possible.
Yeah, the dude looks just like Pete Buttigieg. He is also openly gay. The first openly gay member of the first openly gay prime minister of the Netherlands. Nothing wrong with being gay, but if you recall to how we talked about the color revolutions that were happening throughout Europe, and how the counter to these nationalist protests that we were seeing rise up in the Netherlands, in England, in Germany, in France, was usually the EU flag and the rainbow flag. And I think it's interesting that Rob Jetten gets elected. Rob Jetten, for lack of a better word, was hand-selected and hand-picked by, lack of a better phrase, I should say, by Ursula von der Leyen. He is very pro-EU, very much in that EU stance. And so his predecessor, Wilders, was, again, the populist and the right wing of the Netherlands. And so I think we're going to continue to see this across Europe as the European Union, you know, they continue to spread their fear campaign against Russia. There's going to be a lot of money being spent electing these people that will effectively be whatever the EU decides we're on board with people. It's part of their grander strategy. Closer to federalization, I think, is what they're angling for. So they need to get people like Wilders out. They need to get people like Robert Fico in Slovakia out. And they need to get people like Viktor Orban in Hungary out. Now, Fico and Orban were involved in a very interesting piece of the news this week in that regard. If you recall, last week during the Munich Security Conference, Marco Rubio obviously went, gave his speech. People were, I guess, they liked it. He didn't say anything about Ukraine. They didn't like that. But after the Munich Security Conference, he went to two countries. One is Slovakia, and one was Hungary. And this week, there's a bit of a dust-up in the EU from those two countries over funding to Ukraine. And so it's interesting. Unfortunately, a lot of these clips that I was able to pull, because the mainstream just doesn't cover them, or doesn't cover them in any less than 30-minute videos, are going to be AI. This first one is not, but it has to do with Hungary. And so here is Hungary at the EU after blocking a $90 billion loan to Ukraine from the EU coffers.
EU diplomats had hoped to get a new package of sanctions against Russia approved in time for Tuesday, the fourth anniversary of Moscow's full-scale invasion of Ukraine. But Hungary's opposition is making that deadline increasingly unrealistic.
The problem is that the Ukrainian state hates Hungary and the Ukrainian state carries out an anti-Hungarian political approach for the last 10 years. Ukraine behaves in a very hostile manner towards Hungary. Please ask the Ukrainians why they have stopped the oil deliveries to Hungary.
Kyiv says that the pipeline which supplies oil to Hungary and Slovakia through its territory was damaged by a Russian strike earlier this year. But the two nations claim Kyiv is intentionally not restarting the pipeline as a form of blackmail. It's not just the sanctions that are on the line. Hungary is also threatening to block the €90 billion loan agreed by EU leaders in December, which Ukraine depends on for survival. Ukraine's allies are outraged.
I am astonished by the Hungarian position. We will be discussing this with our Hungarian colleagues.
The thing that shocks me fundamentally is that while Ukraine is defending itself against the might of the Russian army, Hungarians used to understand what it's like.
Poland has accused the Hungarian Prime Minister of exploiting the situation for political gain in the run-up to an April general election. Hungary has blocked previous packages of sanctions against Russia and aid for Ukraine, but has ultimately backed off in exchange for concessions.
Now, so there's that blocking. So the Druzhba pipeline, which they're talking about, is a pipeline that runs from Russia through Ukraine, and eventually has two terminals to Hungary and Slovakia. It's a crude oil pipeline, and as they mentioned in the clip, it's the last place in Europe where they actually refine crude oil from Russia. So it's those two countries, Slovakia and Hungary. I find it interesting that those are the two countries that Marco Rubio visited just last week, complaining about a pipeline that was blown up in January. But keep in mind what I said about Robert Jetten of the Netherlands, who was just kind of handpicked by Ursula von der Leyen, celebrated by Ursula von der Leyen when he won, and very pro-EU, because the EU now is operating as if it is a federalized country. And that's the whole aspect. That's the whole ball game right there, is what they're trying to get. So you have now people coming out and accusing Hungary of disloyalty. So I think the way that the EU works is they kind of meet in a pre-council and they all agree on something, and then they have this big press event where they all go and vote. And Hungary and Slovakia both voted against this €90 billion package to Ukraine. So here is, and this lady has a very French accent, but here she is accusing Hungary of disloyalty to the Union.
EU High Representative Kaya Kallas has sharply accused Hungary of breaching the bloc's principle of sincere cooperation after Budapest unexpectedly decided to veto a €90 billion loan to Ukraine over an unrelated energy dispute.
It's really regrettable that the decision that all countries reached in the European Council, all the leaders, is now that there is now stepping back from this decision. It's not really in accordance with the sincere cooperation clause that we have in the treaties.
The dispute relates to the Druzhba pipeline, which crosses Ukraine and brings Russian crude oil to Hungary and Slovakia thanks to a sanctions exemption. The pipeline was severely damaged in January by a drone attack attributed to Russia. However, both Hungary and Slovakia have blamed Ukraine for the subsequent halt in deliveries. Hungary has also vetoed a new round of sanctions against Russia.
Should have cut that off. My bad. So, yeah, so it's the pipeline was damaged. Apparently, according to the news, the drone attack was attributed to Russia, which sounds sketchy in and of itself. So that's the Hungary angle, and this next clip is AI, I apologize. But this is the Slovakia angle. Again, the pipeline flows into both of those countries through Ukraine. If you are not, I highly recommend.
Let me ask you to look again at a map.
Slovakia.
Slovakia has announced a major escalation in its energy dispute with Ukraine. Robert Fico said on Monday that the country will stop emergency electricity supplies to Ukraine if oil shipments via the Druzhba pipeline do not resume, marking the first reciprocal measure in a growing diplomatic standoff. Fico said he attempted to reach Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky by phone, before taking action, but the Ukrainian side said they could only discuss the matter after February 25th. Given Slovakia's declared state of oil emergency, Fico said the government was forced to proceed with cutting emergency electricity support. He emphasized that the measure would be immediately canceled once oil transit to Slovakia resumes. In a statement, Fico warned that if Ukraine continues to disrupt Slovakia's supply of strategic raw materials, the Slovak government will review its previous supportive positions regarding Ukraine's European Union membership and prepare further reciprocal measures. From today, if the Ukrainian side turns to Slovakia with a request for assistance in stabilizing the Ukrainian energy network, it will not receive such assistance, Fico said.
Yeah, so effectively, Ukraine, which is dependent on emergency electricity supply from Slovakia, they provide 30% of Ukraine's energy over the past couple of months, and they're threatening to turn that off because Ukraine said we can only discuss the matter after February 25th, which was the date of the win. So the vote was on Tuesday, which was yesterday. The date that it actually goes into effect is today, the 25th. And so that's why they said we can only discuss the matter after the 25th. So the issue is Ukraine effectively is using this as a political weapon and saying, you know what, we're not going to fix your pipeline until you vote to fund us. And so yesterday, Hungary and Slovakia both voted to block the 90 billion euro funding, which they had previously said they would vote for. Now, this next clip, again, is AI, and I apologize, Cotton Gin, but this is a new development. So we heard about the attack on the Druzhba pipeline in Ukraine just yesterday. This happened.
Kyiv regime sabotaged a key link in Russia's energy artery. Overnight, on February 23, Ukrainian drones struck the Transneft-operated Kalikino oil pumping station in the Republic of Tatarstan, a critical starting hub of the Druzhba pipeline. Explosions were reported around 4 to 5 a.m., followed by a massive blaze. Thick smoke billowed over the facility near Almetyevsk, underscoring the scale of the strike deep inside Russian territory. Preliminary analysis from Russian monitoring groups suggests RVS 2000 storage tanks, each capable of holding up to 17,000 tons of crude, were likely targeted. The Kalikino node aggregates oil flows, feeding the Druzhba export system, a route handling nearly 30% of Russia's crude transport toward Europe. Satellite imagery from Velikiye Luki in the Pskov region further shows extensive damage, with multiple storage tanks destroyed, pointing to an expanding campaign against export-linked infrastructure. The strike comes amid an escalating transit standoff. Since January 27, Ukraine has halted oil flows to Hungary and Slovakia via the southern Druzhba branch, citing damage from a Russian strike on its segment. Budapest and Bratislava accuse Kyiv of political coercion.
That's right. Yeah, the background music is annoying. It was AI. Again, I'm sorry, Cotton Gin. But it's interesting because Ukraine attacks the pipeline. It hits the pipeline, again, in Russia after Slovakia and Ukraine and Hungary refused to vote for their $90 billion funding, as if not understanding the lesson not to bite the hand that feeds you. So that is interesting. I think this is a call. I think right now Viktor Orban is trailing in the polls to Peter Magyar, I believe his name is, pretty significantly. Polymarket has him down by a large clip. So he's really kind of betting on this anti-Brussels, anti-Ukraine support to get him ahead in the polls. I think Orban falls, you got Magyar in there, and then Robert Fico is the only person left. Fico, of course, is the politician that was nearly killed by a left-wing activist about a year ago in Slovakia for his, I guess, Russian-friendly stance. And so little by little, you're starting to see that that left-wing coalition, Queen Ursula, is setting up the pieces nicely to have all of the EU members on board and agree. So the theory that we've been laying out for the past couple of months here is panning out nicely. Ursula is controlling Europe. She's going to federalize it, become the actual queen of Europe, and the federal EU is on the table. I think with ex-bankers calling for it, Ursula von der Leyen lining up these pro-European, pro-gay politicians, she's got a good hand. She's got a good hand. An interesting utility that I found this week, actually, John sent a link to it to me, is worldmonitor.app. It's got a bunch of stuff on here, a bunch of kind of unnecessary stuff, but it has a beautiful map. And one of the map filters is actually pipelines. So you can put a filter on and see all of the world pipelines. Just by looking at it, you can see that it's a rather large AI undertaking and kind of a little bit of a messy site. But when you get okay with navigating it, you can actually use it to see different conflict zones, how oil flows through Europe, how internet the underwater internet cables, current boat, military planes, bases, and boat deployments. It's really cool. It's really, really cool. So I was using that to look at the Druzhba pipeline that cuts right through Ukraine and flows directly into Slovakia and Hungary. So it looks like it actually just flows into Slovakia, and then from Slovakia, it flows into Hungary. But man, this is a neat tool, but it is data hungry, data intensive, and you can tell it's just not very well designed. There's a couple of features like not being able to make the map full screen, as opposed to, you know, you can unload panels, but you can't make the map full screen, which is like one feature that I want. So I think I might have to rip this from its GitHub and make a MMO version of it where we're just looking at maps, because I don't care about live streams and webcams. I just want the actual mapped information. And what's cool about it too is you can select a country. Again, this is a worldmonitor.app. You can select a country and it'll pull up some quick statistics about it, about its economy, any sort of relevant news story that has come out recently about that country. It's got a bunch of dots on it highlighting specific conflicts and areas of interest. It's pretty neat, but it is data heavy. So make sure you got a lot of working RAM if you're going to load it up. But moving on, a couple more stories out of Europe. I think first we'll start with MERS. MERS is going to China. He wants to smooth things over with their new owners, apparently.
German Chancellor Friedrich Merz won a pledge by China to import more high-quality goods from Germany on Wednesday. He visited Beijing aiming to reset relations clouded by a yawning trade deficit with the world's second-largest economy. Accompanied by a large business delegation, Merz told President Xi Jinping he wanted to deepen economic ties with Germany's largest trading partner last year. Merz faces a balancing act of redefining the economic relationship that is increasingly unfavourable to German interests. Berlin sees an undervalued yuan, market-distorting subsidies, and overcapacity among Chinese exporters. That has built massive trade surpluses with Europe's largest economy, amounting to $106 billion last year. Premier Li Qiang said China wished to cooperate in areas like automobiles and chemicals, as well as emerging fields including artificial intelligence and biomedicine. He also encouraged Chinese companies to invest in Germany, according to a readout from the meeting released by Xinhua News Agency. China has been seeking to present itself as a reliable economic partner as Europe struggles with a new, less certain relationship with Washington. Li called on both sides to work together to safeguard multilateralism and free trade, in a comment seen as a reference to US President Donald Trump's trade war.
Now, how Germany can talk about the atrocities that happen, you know, condemning atrocities across the globe, and be fine with the relationship with China, who has suppressed the Uyghur population, turned away from democracy many, many decades ago, and a number other, countless other humanitarian violations, and be fine with them as a trading partner, it just doesn't compute. This to me is either hedging your bet or just showing face in front of the Americans, until somebody like Gavin Newsom can come along and say, hey, you know what, let's restore that old world order that is so severely broken. I don't really buy that happening, but what are you gonna do? All right, moving on, we got some news out of France, and this was a clip actually that I had brought but didn't play 2 weeks ago, so we'll see what John has here. This is a John clip, just playing it for posterity's sake.
It's a clear message from France telling the United States to stay in line and keep away from internal issues. The country's foreign affairs minister, Jean-Noël Barrot, has requested that US ambassador Charles Kushner be cut off from members of the French government.
In light of this apparent failure to grasp the basic requirements of the ambassadorial mission and the honour of representing one's country, the minister has requested that he no longer be allowed direct access to members of the French government.
The decision comes after the US State Department's Counterterrorism Bureau put out a tweet in reference to the killing of a 23-year-old French far-right activist. The online post, which was retweeted by the US Embassy in France, says that the United States will continue to monitor the situation regarding Quentin Durant's death, and that it expects to see perpetrators be brought to justice.
We refuse any exploitation of this tragedy, which has left a French family in mourning for political ends. We have no lessons to learn from the reactionary international. As for analyzing political life, the place of violence, and violence more generally, we serve up those insights ourselves with quite enough verve, and we will not allow others to serve them to us.
Charles Kushner is the father of Jared Kushner, Donald Trump's son-in-law and senior advisor. He'd already been summoned last year after sending a letter to French President Emmanuel Macron alleging that the country wasn't doing enough to combat anti-Semitism. He failed to show up to that meeting too. The foreign ministry has left the door open for reconciliation, saying that Kushner could still access its building should he want to hold the necessary diplomatic discussions.
Yeah, Charles Kushner is an interesting cat. Jared Kushner, as I mentioned there, is a son-in-law and one of the big guys that's involved in Europe and the Middle East and the Abraham Accords. He's kind of a shady character, a man you wish you knew more about. But the activist that was killed was actually a right-wing activist that was beat to death by left-wing activists in France. And, you know, was this claim that he had what he deserved what he got, you know, and the violent rhetoric. The left wing papers always come out after that and say we got to turn down the rhetoric on both sides. Both sides are responsible, even though it was the left that beat somebody to death. You know, it's really funny that when a left wing person gets killed, it's because of the violent right. When a right wing person gets killed, you know, everyone needs to take responsibility and turn down the temperature, is the general message that we receive out of France. France recently did a thing. I think it was Fifi Lagarde is going to step down as the European Central Bank, and they're doing so ahead of an election, so that the current president, Macron, will be able to have some say in the selection of the next head of the European Central Bank. To avoid the potential of a right-wing politician in France having any sort of say as to who could replace her. There was speculation that it's going to happen. She kind of played it off like it wasn't going to happen. I've heard people speculate that it's because of the digital euro and its inevitable failure, which I think is an interesting theory, but I think More so, it is about the power politics here of making sure you can put your person in place as opposed to having to rely on a right-wing person potentially electing a Euroskeptic to head the bank. It's a pretty powerful position. And as we know, the past European head, Mario Draghi, is currently calling for EU federalization, which I think is also Ursula von der Leyen's unspoken goal. So we'll see. We'll see. I have a folder here. I have something on Iran, and John brought a folder full of Iran clips. So I haven't listened to these Iran clips. I don't know what the segment is about. I can only assume the order that they get played in, so it might be fun. We can try to figure out John's mind through his trip his clip trail.
Americans won't be the only ones watching tonight's speech. The world will be following the State of the Union address closely, particularly to see what the president says about Iran. For more, let's bring in CBS News senior national security correspondent Charlie Daggett, who is in Tel Aviv, Israel. So U.S. military personnel are largely in place for this potential military operation. But Charlie, how long can this buildup be sustainable?
Lindsay, that is a very key question, because when you talk about the largest buildup that this region has seen, certainly in terms of air power, we're talking about since 2003, the invasion of Iraq, and there is a lot of it. And then the naval power. And yes, that is not sustainable for, you know, an indefinite amount of time. And the reason being, when you move aircraft into position, F-18s, F-35s, F-22 fighter jets, stealth fighter jets, there are logistics around that. They have to be fueled up and they have to be ready to go. They have to have the munitions in place. And it's all down to what military readiness or combat readiness is how the military terms that. So they are in that position, essentially like a sprinter on the starting blocks. And now we've got two aircraft carriers that are now in place, the USS Gerald R. Ford, which we believe to be off the coast of the Mediterranean, not far from here. Eventually, in the next few days, the USS Abraham Lincoln, again with the F-35s and the F-18 fighter jets, all of these aircraft and personnel and naval assets in place if, and this is a big if, by the way, if called upon to attack Iran, and if that happens, to provide protection, force protection for the tens of thousands of U.S. troops in this region, and where I'm standing, Israel itself, which is likely to come under attack from a retaliation from Iran, again, if this is to take place.
Yeah, there wasn't a whole lot of mention of Iran in Trump's speech, but it is true there's been a lot of military assets moved into position. Some concerning speculation this week, too. So previously, the protests went off in Iran. There was the response. There were no large buildup of military assets, at least from the U.S. perspective, in the immediate region during those protests. They were headed that way. However, I think I made a comment on the show that if the protests spark up again, then it should be time for concern, because now we have everybody in position. And so I'll interject my Iranian clip right here before we continue with John's.
Protests have reignited in Iran as university students take to the streets for a second consecutive day. Demonstrations broke out Sunday at six universities across Tehran and Mashhad, marking the traditional 40-day mourning period for thousands killed during January's anti-government rallies. Iran has not commented on the latest demonstrations, which come as the U.S. continues to build up military presence in the region. European Parliament President Roberta Metsola said on social media platform X that Iran must be free, and that the country had been, quote, at the boot of a forceful theocracy since she was alive. The situation remains volatile. Visual footage from Saturday depicts a stark atmosphere of confrontation as security forces and pro-government groups clash with protesting students on campus.
Holy plosions, Batman. That's from Euronews. Yeah, so that is concerning, because now the same protests that were so abhorrent to the West before in the Iranian response, those protests are kicking off again. I think it's about as organic as a piece of licorice, meaning that I think there are foreign actors that are kind of spurring up these protests within Iran. But it's concerning because now we're in position. were ready to respond. These negotiations are going on. I think there's a couple of times last week where I thought, you know, this could be it. I was specifically looking at Friday and Saturday night. It's like, it looked good. All the indicators of the pizza indicator was going off the charts. I was like, oh, could be it. I've kind of lost faith in the pizza indicator, though. It seems to constantly be at abnormally high levels. So I don't know if that is a trusted source anymore or if it's actively being manipulated by something. So I've got no clue. But the protests sparking off in Iran, the boats in position, that is concerning. So we'll get back into John's clips here. I don't know where they're going, what they're doing, but there's one in here that has toilets in the title, so that'll be interesting. Limited or large scale? CBS, I think this is a continuation of the Iran coverage about a potential attack on Iran. I think Trump wants limited. He doesn't want anything at all. I think he wants a deal, but he wants limited, and everyone is trying to tell him that it has to be large scale.
So based on what you're hearing from sources, your own reading of the tea leaves, is the president considering a targeted strike or a larger, longer-term operation if he acts?
Lindsay, honestly, all of the above. And it's not me being coy. Not only myself, other individuals who are in touch with our contacts at the Pentagon and in the region, CENTCOM, Central Command, as we call it. It's down to the president. It's down to the White House. It's down to a certain group of individuals. And they will have a whole menu, an a la carte menu of either limited strikes, possibly hitting the regime, possibly hitting Iranian ballistic missile sites, which is certainly what the Israelis want to see. And the Israelis might be in league with that particular strike package, or it might be a 1-2 punch where the United States is hitting regime targets. And the Israelis are going after ballistic missiles because that's the priority. We've spoken to intelligence officials here who say that is an option, too. So you're looking at the whole kind of gamut. And President Trump has said this himself. He's considering limited strikes.
Did he say gamut?
But they're also preparing for what could be a prolonged, sustained campaign, not just against Iran, but the way Iran retaliates, because we have it on pretty good authority that Iran has possibly 1,800 missiles, mid to long range missiles that can hit right here where we're standing. We were there this afternoon, just a couple of blocks away, where an Iranian missile during the 12-day war last year in June hit that area, capable of hitting this, getting past that Iron Dome. And if it can reach here, it can reach U.S. forces too.
Very true. We could evacuate those forces, though. So this one is called, I know what this is. this is Problems. So I think it is, again, a continuation of the CBS report. We'll hear it.
Problem one, design plan is screwed up by including too few toilets.
Gave it away.
The planned U.S. attack on Iran has a hitch. Most of the bomb targeting crew are busy queuing for toilets on the lead vessel, the USS Gerald R. Ford. This is not a joke. A set of emails was obtained by NPR, a U.S. public broadcasting group, revealing that toilet wars have broken out on board the most expensive ship the U.S. Navy ever built. And the Wall Street Journal followed up to confirm the tale today. TLDR summary, there are too few functioning toilets for 4,600 sailors, and the problem is worsening daily.
Yeah, I've definitely heard about this issue. I've seen some pictures. Evidently, the toilets on the Gerald Ford are backing up, and there's no place to put their poop, and they can't really fix it while they're out at sea. So I don't know what you do there. I don't know who is flushing used tampons down the toilet, but it seems that the septics on the Gerald Ford need a good pumping. They need a honeysucker somewhere. So let's hear about some more problems on that.
Problem one, design plan is screwed up by including too few toilets for 4,000-plus sailors, leading to 45-minute queues on a daily basis. Problem two, engineers screwed up by installing a fragile vacuum system in which a single valve breakdown on one toilet can stop all the toilets in an entire department functioning, making the queues even longer. Problem three, some of the temporary repair operations, such as using an acid flush to clear out calcium buildups, can only be done while the ship is docked. No prospect of that. But with so many toilets out of order, too much pressure is put on the one still working, so the problem will just spread. And the issues have already been mounting for more than a year. A March 18th, 2025 email from the engineering department sent out to all chiefs on the ship said there were 205 toilet breakdowns in 4 days, the NPR reported.
One of my friends in college, he was an aerospace engineer and took a job with, I believe, Boeing. And his main responsibility was designing toilets on airplanes. Which one of his first jobs was designing toilets. So there's a lot that goes into that thought process. And evidently they've screwed the pooch on the Gerald Ford toilets. So I wonder if these Trump-class destroyers are going to have similar plumbing issues, or if they're going to have to rewrite the book on that one. You know, the convenient thing about the ocean is that if you are a guy, or I guess if you're a girl, who cares? You know, there's just over the rail. You just got to go over the rail, and all your poop goes away. You know, people say, oh, that's unsanitary. You can't do that. Where do you think fish go to the bathroom, huh? You think they're concerned about poop in the water? No, they just go right where they live. That's fish. And people still try to tell me that tilapia is a good food. A tilapia is a carp that sits at the bottom of the river and eats poop, eats other fish's poop. So it's a bottom feeder. Not a good fish. Tilapia is just a fancy name for carp, which is a poop-eating fish. So there you have it. Iranian coverage done. Let's see. Is that it? Did I play everything? I've played everything. I played everything that I have. So I think some people probably heard about Mike Huckabee this week. Tucker Carlson interviewed him. I don't know why anyone that is pro-Israel agrees to go on Tucker Carlson's show anymore. I feel like there's been enough examples, namely Ted Cruz getting his butt handed to him. But Huckabee made a statement where Tucker Carlson asked him to clarify his stance on the biblical promise of land spanning between the Euphrates River in Iraq and the Nile River in Egypt to the descendants of Abraham.
Let me ask you to look again at a map.
So he said, Huckabee said it would be fine if Israel took it all. Such territory would encompass modern-day Lebanon, Syria, Jordan, and parts of Saudi Arabia. So I think that's their end goal. I don't think they're anywhere near that ability right now. But, yes, who knew? Mike Huckabee is a Zionist, one of the biblical Zionists, the evangelical Zionists that are such a large problem these days. But I do digress. I can't make much more than 6 million points about it. But we do have some donations, so let's get into the donations segment and thank some people this evening. You are riding along on the offensive every Tuesday night at about 5:30 p.m. John and I hop on the stream, an exception this week, and we try to deconstruct the media, what's going on around us. We don't have any advertisers. We're not trying to get you to subscribe to stuff. And instead, we just ask if you have received any value whatsoever from the show, that you can return it in some way. It can come in the form of fiat donations, Bitcoin donations, little jingles. We just had Tom from Texas send us a nice Irish kind of shanty for the show. Going to be debuting that on the St. Patrick's Day show, which is a Tuesday again this year, and it should be fun. But that being said, we always like to start off by the person that sent us some art. They went to Dan, or they sent an email to Dan at MMO.show and John at MMO.show, and we received it and we liked it. We reviewed it. It was great. That was not Clip Custodian. That was Eli the Coffee Guy that came in last week with his nice kind of rendition of beef pancakes and the beef pancake mix, Western Authentic. This struck me as particularly funny because there's a grocery store in St. Louis called Pan Asia, and I swear to God, all of their products, all of their frozen products look exactly like this, where it'll have some distinct Chinese text on it and then a very poor kind of translation as to what it actually is. And it's usually like bao bun, Beijing, you know, like Beijing style bao bun, whatever the hell that is. But it was an AI piece, but I think there's a lot of neat features that went into it. I actually live on the show translated the text, and it does say beef pancake mix. And I had a couple of people send me an email that said, "Hey, did you know that says beef pancakes mix?" And I said, "Yeah, I did." Even my brother sent me a text on it too. So it's a great piece. I love it. It looks like a product. I like that it contains 5% beef and 95% fire horse. I think that was a nice touch. Premium media formula. So job well done, Eli. He's been more consistent with his art submissions, and it's always appreciated. Always love to see people coming through. We haven't seen Wolf in a minute. You know, I'm starting to worry about Wolf. I think he might have been gone overboard, but hopefully he comes back into the mix. We love having a nice competitive amount of art to choose from. All righty. So thank you, Eli. We don't have any art for tonight, so if anyone's listening and has any ideas, feel free to send it to Dan at MMO.show, and I'm sure it'll get picked because, again, we don't have any art for tonight. That being said, we did have a couple of fiat donations, and speak of the devil, Eli the Coffee Guy, right off the rip, comes in through PayPal with $33.33 and says, "Gentlemen, keep up the great work. Can't wait to see what you guys are, what your guys' take is regarding on the flare-up in the south of the border. Speaking of Mexico, we just released our new Armanac, ARMAGNAC. I think it's like, what am I thinking of here? Cognac? Armanac. I've never heard of this, if it's a different thing. But it's an Armanac barreled aged Mexican Veracruz. We expect to sell out pretty quick, so grab one ASAP. Stay caffeinated and stay on the offensive, Eli the Coffee Guy."
On the offensive.
I'm going to have to Google this. Armanac. I don't know if it's different than like cognac. Armanac. I'll be damned. It's a brandy produced in France. Armanac. I had no idea. That sounds delicious, and I would love to try some. Thank you very much, Eli. Much appreciated on that front, and thank you for the donation as well. I always appreciate having you. He's got a meetup that's going on in, I think, the south side of Chicago, or the south suburbs of Chicago, on March 7th. With Darren O'Neill, nonetheless, of the Rock and Roll Pre-Show and many other podcasts. So best of luck there. I hope it turns out well, and thank you for the donation, and best of luck with Gigawatt Coffee. You're the best. Trashman comes in through PayPal with $13.45, and he says, "How'd the mathematician remedy his constipation?" He worked it out with a pencil, which I appreciate that joke. I do. There used to be a utensil in our household that was, when children were constipated, it was used. So, always a good insider information there. Thank you very much, Trashman. Tom from Wyoming comes in through $10 through PayPal and says, "Hello, gents. I'm not a big Olympics guy. However, I am a big hockey fan, so I really enjoy the hockey tournament, especially when the NHL players are involved. When the United States won the gold medal, the conservative YouTube sphere turned it into a MAGA victory over Commie Canada. My question is, can we have any sort of event happen in the world that is not clouded with owning libs or calling conservatives fascists? Obviously not." And case in point, last night at the speech, the male hockey team was there at the State of the Union. But he continues. "Here's my point. There were watch parties all over North America, millions of Americans, and definitely millions more Canadians watching the game together. All political, societal, and religious whatever other than identity qualifiers you want to add, watch this game. It was arguably the most anticipated international hockey game in about 20 years. This being the first Olympics in which the NHL players played in a while. The second the U.S. won, it was a dunk on libtard Canada and all the other American athletes who complained about ice, because the American hockey players said they love the U.S. From conservative YouTube and conservative boomer media. Can we just take a broader look at this and show that these millions of viewers in both countries put their political nonsense down for 3 hours to watch two elite teams play one of the greatest hockey games of all times, and frankly, one of the greatest American international victories without ever delving into the real world issues of the day. Even escapist entertainment is being infected by dunking culture. It's sad to see. Anyway, I thought I'd drop a dono and some wisdom for OTO.
On the offensive.
Thank you, sir. I agree with you. I think everything has been hyper-politicized, you know, ever since, not ever since, probably before this, but in George Floyd, when, you know, I worked for a small real estate development company back in the day, and home office of probably 20 people, and the CEO felt compelled to send out a message about the George Floyd killing. And I remember my black coworker, Alicia, pretty much being like, who is this for? And I was like, I think you know who it's for, Alicia. But when companies, you know, start to come out and have to make statements about things, they don't have to, they choose to. I think that was kind of the peak of it. And it really kind of brought it off where we have to politicize everything. Everyone has to make a statement about politics. Wrong is wrong, you know, right is right, whatnot. I don't like it at all, and I can see you also don't like it. Everyone, you don't need to be reminded about your political beliefs every 5 minutes, and I think that's one of the reasons why I focus so much on international politics, geopolitics, more so than status politics, because, you know, I was the president of Young Republicans in high school. You know, I was into politics when it was not something cool to be into, and now that it is kind of mainstream and everyone's tuned in all the time and stating their political propaganda, I just have tuned out of that, and am much more interested on what's happening on a geopolitical level, more so than the status politics of left, right, libtard and MAGA cuck, if you will. So I do appreciate that sentiment quite a bit. But you know, it's a personal choice. You know, we can choose to create a society. And I think that's one thing that to toot our own horn a little bit, I think that's one thing that we're pretty good at here is, you know, you've heard me on the show praise how I enjoy the American system that Trump's enacting and how we should be focusing more on these international successes while also lamenting how horribly tone-deaf the handling of things like Minnesota have been on the statist front. So I don't think that we interject our politics all the time on the show, but, you know, we do have kind of nuanced opinions where we're not just, you know, straight up MAGA or straight up leftists. And I think that is going to gain an appealing nature. It's a lot easier today to build an audience if you are pretty much taking a base level ideology like Republican or Democrat or MAGA or you know, centrist, like have an extreme, and then you have your extreme fans that support it. It's one of the reasons why Nick Fuentes is so good. You know, he's definitely not a political guy, but he is a bit of extreme when it comes to other certain topics. And so it's appealing to people to be extreme. But I think as that goes on, that'll be kind of a played out pony, and people will actually want more nuanced, more balanced kind of opinions. And I think that's where MMO sits, at least in my opinion. So thank you very much, Tom. That's much appreciated. And yeah, good note. The Nail Lord of Gaylord comes in through Venmo for $5 and says, "Nlog here, OTO. Oh boy, State of the Union. This should be fun. Can't wait for your breakdown next week. More Africa," says the Nail Lord of Gaylord. And we should have some more Africa. I wish there was news happening in Africa. Unfortunately, we can't even have a satisfactory African package, let alone a
large African package.
So we'll see. But thank you. Yeah, I gave it a little bit of a breakdown. I want to see what John thinks about it next week, too. So we'll definitely talk about it next week. Praetor Weirdo of the Not-So-Flatlands comes in through Cash App with $3.33 and says, OTO.
On offensive.
Thank you very much, Cash Man. It is much... Cash Man. Thank you, Cash Man Weirdo. Praetor Weirdo of the Knots of Flatlands. Thank you for everyone that came in via fiat donations. It is much appreciated. And now I'm just realizing that I usually kick it over to John to read the boosts, and John's not here. So I have to load up that website myself. But we did have a couple of boosts that came in. First on the top of the list is Eric PP. Came in through CarioCaster with 3,333 Satoshis. And it was just a live boost, live to the show, say, hey, you're lit. He called me out for not being lit, so thank you, sir. I'm going to give you one of these.
I'm a millennial.
And you know what? You know what? I don't think I've ever defetified. I don't think I've ever defetified Eric Pepe. Not that he needs it, but I think everyone should be defetified.
You are not
a fed.
There you go. Eric Pepe, not a fed. Bully Steed comes in through Fountain with 2,222 Satoshis. She came in last night, actually, and said, State of the Union Entertainment Boost. Thank you very much, man.
On offensive.
Always appreciated. Fair Voltee came in through Fountain with 208 Satoshis and says, 208 was ace. O-T-O.
On offensive.
You got this, DJ Horsecoo, which is my pre-show alter ego. I think I got a little drop for that one. John's not here, so he can't be upset, right?
DJ Horsecoo.
That's right. Thank you very much, Fervil D. Nostra Gang came in through Fountain twice. First with 111 Satoshis for Satisfactory African Package, which was our last episode, and says, MMO gang.
On offensive.
Gang, gang. Thank you very much. She came in a second time with 111 Satoshis on the State of the Applause MMO special coverage of the State of the Union and says, LA is going to be safe. Is going to be safe. Yes, it is. It's going to be safe, just like Washington, D.C. is safe. And we're happy for it. We're happy for it. Thank you very much, Nostra Gang. And that does it for all of our Fiat Donators. We'll get in the second half of the show. I got news for you, though. There's not a whole lot of action going on there, but here we go.
Get it on.
That's right. So for the second half, we don't actually have any clips. I just wanted to take a minute to say thank you to everybody that has stood by the offensive, that has made the offensive, people that are coming out of the woodwork, giving us jingles, giving us art. It's always much appreciated. I know we haven't been as consistent lately, so we do put out something every week. It's been Wednesday, it's been Tuesday, you know, but I just want to remind everybody we are, you know, human beings. We do have full-time jobs. My job has been a BITCH recently. And so it's tough to get on the offensive, and then plus the recent addition of twins to my family. So, I appreciate everyone for understanding, that scenario that I'm currently living and, you know, that we're human. We're all human. And I think that together, we can change the world. Like Tom in Wyoming saying, I'm sick of all this. Everything's got to be politics. I agree, man. I agree wholeheartedly. I'm not trying to tell you that Trump is God, or that he's Hitler. I'm just trying to tell you that he's Trump. And I'm trying to look at what he's doing and analyze it. And I'm trying to do that for everyone across the world, all the geopolitics and all the globes around all the globe. When you talk so long, you just start saying words and you don't even know where you're going with the sentence. But in short, I just want to say thank you, because this has been an experiment that John and I have been doing for 4 years. We're in our fifth year of doing the show, which is hard to believe. And it's amazing. And we couldn't have done it without you. And so I'm grateful for that. So thank you, everybody. We're going to get out of here. This was 208. Stick around. I'm going to produce the show, and I'm going to get upstairs by 7:30 and put my kids to bed. And it's going to be a fun hump day. Nick, the Rat's coming up live on the No Agenda stream tonight at 8 Central, I think, or 9 Central. If you haven't heard Nick, the Rat, you're going to love him. So have a good evening and let's get out of here. Yeah, I forget about the delay between when I press the button and when this starts. Whatever. Yeah, that was the show. That was probably my best solo show to date. Usually they're rushed, a lot shorter. And, I don't know, I think that went well. We'll be right back. But it's definitely nice to have a co-host to bounce stuff off of. You know, when you get yourself into a corner or like that you weren't paying attention to the last clip, you just wanna send it over to John. I actually am guilty of that a lot. Now, what do you think about that? That's the cue. That's the cue. If a clip ends and it's like John's clip, and perhaps I was busy working on something on the back end, I'll oftentimes say, what do you think about that? Just because I don't even know what to say. So, yeah. I don't know if I'm a good solo podcaster, but I do like having a podcast. I like having a co-host. I think there's mediums that I would be good at. I think heavy, dense stuff, though, is a little tough. But anyway, it's about an hour of entertainment. A good show. We'll see what people, if we get any donos, or if people call it horseshit. But we put out two shows this week. I did do a live coverage of the State of the Union. It was boring as hell, but I did it. And I did it sober. But from St. Louis, Missouri, I've been Dan Gehring. Next week, we will have John back, God willing. We'll do MMO 209, and it's going to be a banger. I can already feel it. I can already feel it. Something big's going to happen this week. I can feel it in my bones. But even if we don't, we'll be here next Tuesday. We will see you next Tuesday. Keep one in the chamber, all the other things. MMO out.